Hello and welcome to In Her Corner, a podcast dedicated to celebrating and empowering women working at every level of sport on and off the field. I'm your host, Lisely Satali, and today I'm very excited to introduce a woman who is the first in her role, but by no means last, especially with no doubt the great legacy she will leave in it. It's the absolutely brilliant Hazia Belem, who is the IMF, meaning the International Mixed Martial Arts Federation's chairwoman. How are you? And welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Lisely. Thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you. I'm really well and I'm super happy to be your guest today. Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm really good today. Thanks. And you?
Please. It's an absolute pleasure, or avec plaisir, as I would say in your native tongue. It's awesome to have you here, and especially excited to hear all the great things that you're doing in the world of mixed martial arts, particularly to level with gender participation and to get more women in the sport and to make sure that they have a great platform to have a successful career. So I thought before we dive in to tell the story of how you got to this great position and also all the other amazing things you do, it would be good if you just gave a little bit of a background about what it is that first made you fall in love with the sport. And then we'll talk a little bit about what your role is at the IMF, and then we'll then go from there.
Sure. Well, my passion for MMA started in a pretty funny way. Basically, it was more than 10 years ago, and I watched this movie Warriors with Tom Hardy and
Joel Edgerton.
Absolutely. And I completely discovered America. Like, what is this sport, you know? And yeah, I couldn't believe how hard it was. And, you know, how it was popular in the US and why it wasn't so popular in other countries. You know, I literally fell in love with this movie and the sports, and this is how I discovered MMA. And since then, I saw the evolution of this sport from a free fight sport, very violent, still a very regulated sport with rules and, you know, officials and a federation and organizations. So it's just amazing to see how quick it went, you know, from this very wild sport to a very regulated one.
Yeah. No, it's been awesome. And I really love that in particular, how you came to it, right? That idea that this movie inspired through telling the story of the sport, because that's a real validation for the directors and the makers of it.
Absolutely.
So I hope they get a chance somehow, or I'm going to put a shout out to our network, because the In Her Corner network, I can tell you, I've been amazed at the level of connections that people who listen to this have. So if they have it, they have to make sure that both Tom Hardy and Joe Egerton and the director come to attend one of your events in France. We're going to put the call out there.
I would be so happy to meet them, you know.
Exactly, yeah. We're going to put the call out there. Tom Hardy, come find Hazia.
If you're listening to us.
Exactly, and go to an event and come and support the sport. So there we go. We put it out in the universe. So hopefully people will help.
The message is sent.
Exactly. And so on a day-to-day level, obviously you saw that film, you saw the sport, you started to immerse yourself in it and started to understand the complexities, I guess, right there, about how do you turn a sport that has quite a poor image, and in particular in the context of a country like France, where you were living and you grew up, into a professional sport that's respected and people can admire and think about in the same way as we think about, let's say, more mainstream sports categories, even like, let's say, boxing, in the way that it's become seen that way. What are some of the things that you do on a day-to-day basis in your current role that help to do that, particularly, I guess, for women, right, to try and sell the idea in quite, let's say, a way that society has conditioned the role of women to not do sport in general, let alone a combat sport? What are some of the things that you do in your role and your organization to help change and subvert that perception?
Well, I coordinate with the IMF. They gave me, you know, the contacts and the database because it's easier to go and talk to federations in countries where MMA is already implemented. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you go to Ireland, which is a country where MMA is extremely popular, you know, things are already very organized. and people are in love with MMA. And of course, we have Conor McGregor, who is, you know, the face of MMA there. Yeah. And he is a very inspiring person, even globally, you know. And
yes, hugely if, so. Yeah.
Yeah. And if I take the example of Ireland, Irish women are very, very involved in MMA. And they have reached the level where they are setting things right also for women who just had a baby, for
yes.
mothers, and for them it's a sport that is really important. And I would say that maybe in Ireland MMA is as popular as soccer
yeah.
or football, you know.
Yeah, I think yeah, it's exactly really and Gaelic football sport. Yeah,
yes,
yeah, yeah.
So sometimes it's, yeah, basically easier to go in countries where MMA is already implemented. And the challenge is for other countries where MMA is not implemented.
Yes.
So on a day-to-day basis, I would summarize by saying that one of my role is to get in touch with people who are passionate about MMA. Because yeah. this is the root of everything. Most of the time, people are volunteering.
Yes.
They do this for passion. And
yes. yeah.
passion is a huge... You
driver.
Know, yeah, driver, you know, to develop MMA. And so this is how I work with passionate people.
That's awesome. What a great way and what to describe your job. But also, by the way, if anyone's listening and wants to be a chairwoman, there's more to it than that. I love the level of humility that you have shown there and summarizing your role eloquently. But I think, that, yeah, but I think that's what's at the core of a lot of the work that you need to do, right? Because you are needing to bring people along on a journey and selling them an idea. And I think if they're already passionate and invested in it, mm-hmm. it makes that so much easier. And when you are in markets, so let's talk about your home market in France, because when we connected, you mm-hmm. first told me some of the challenges in France that the sport wasn't even legal.
Yes.
How do you work in those sort of kind of contexts? What are kind of the learnings you've got from operating in a market like that?
To be honest, I based my experience with France, my challenges with France, thanks to my previous work with the IMF and with the other countries. Because even though sometimes it was easier in certain countries, it was really difficult in other countries. People
yeah.
don't even want to talk about MMA because for yeah. them, it's still violent and it's not a good image for women.
Yeah.
Combat sports in some countries for cultural or religious reasons is not something they want to develop.
Yeah.
So in France, it was different because we had a strong lobbying of other combat sports who were afraid of losing their athletes because they thought so many athletes would give up on certain sports. They were very careful with having MMA in France, and because MMA is very young. It's a
yeah.
very young sport, and
yeah.
They wanted to have more... you know, background, and to make sure that everything could do well, could go well. So
yes,
in France, the MMA was legalized last year in March 2020. So
yeah, I found that extraordinary when you told me, because in my head, I would have assumed that it would be legal in France. Genuinely, that's my ignorance, but I genuinely would have
training
doubted
is legal.
It.
But competing, yeah. you need to go abroad. You needed to go abroad. And we are still waiting for the next, you know, competitions to happen, the next championships. So
yeah.
things are being structured right now. But in
yeah.
the meantime, I try to feed my experience with other countries. And, for example, you know, in France, I try to organize family classes. I mean,
yeah.
at least to propose this to the federation, saying that,
yes.
you know, MMA is for everyone. If you
yes.
want people to listen and to give credit to MMA, you need to show that it's a universal sport and that
yes.
it's for everyone.
Yes.
Men, women, mothers, young girls, and you need to show concrete actions. And what I say is like, look, in Ireland, we've been able to put this in place. Look,
yes.
in Africa, we've done this. And in so many other countries, it doesn't require much money. Because
yes.
sometimes I work with very poor countries. They don't have
yeah.
even buses to go to the gym. So
yeah.
when you talk to the French Boxing Federation, who is in charge of developing MMA in France, they really listen to these initiatives and to these ideas. And people are so motivated to develop MMA in France. So this is how I try to feed my work in France, thanks to other countries and thanks to the other passionate people abroad.
Yeah, no, that's really great. And I think having those case studies, right, is so important, because that often helps to prove that moment of validation for people if they feel nervous or scared or unknown, because often that is what, so let's say, surmounts the barriers that you already have in your way, if they don't feel like, oh, have you done that before, and showing that case study. And in the, just touching on that subject there that you were talking about, the family setup within sports, that's such a great initiative, because I think when you look at more popular sports, even football, they have, although they've managed to improve the level of participation of women in sport, it's the conversion of them to being professional women and then sustaining them in the game has been lost, because there is, of course, that lack of recognition about the challenge that comes with if you then do have a family as a mother, or even as a young a man when you start playing football and then you go on to be a parent, all those things. But baking in that idea that you can still participate in your sport as a family, I think is a really great learning that all sports can pick up on and can really help.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's really important for every woman, and even more for women who have a child. And imagine a woman who is raising her child on her own to practice, you know, to go to the MMA gyms, and imagine the image of, you know, her child watching his mom fighting, you know, and she will feel powerful, and it will be a huge mental benefit, you know.
For sure.
And I think people start realizing, even though the U.S. are in, you know, they have so much advance on the.
Progress they've made is far ahead.
It's huge. And we need to be inspired by the U.S. on this, because thanks to American organizations, we see that female MMA can be also a huge economic benefit, you know.
Yes, hugely so.
Because
UFC, just look at UFC, the success they've had with big stars like Ronda Rousey, right? Who's now gone on to become a cult celebrity figure from her sport.
Absolutely. Yeah. And basically, if you show people that developing female MMA is not just a social responsibility, you say, okay, we can do the right thing, and at the same time, you can make money.
Yes.
You will gather all the stakeholders around this goal, and people will listen to you. And as you said, you have use cases with the US, with the UFC, and also with Invicta, which is
Invicta,
an organization who develops a lot of you know, female MMA fights. So it's really important to show that it's only... there are only benefits in developing female MMA.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and you've also got also sports like Bellator, which are making huge strides all across North America, as well as in the US itself. And one of the things that I wonder, when you are in those conversations, obviously, as the first chairwoman of your organization, I've been to some MMA meetings with rights holders. I won't name them, but I will tell you that I will tell you that there was an absence of females at top level, bar one famous fight sports organization, and I'm sure everyone knows WWE. Apart from them, really, there's not that much representation at the senior level of women. So how do you manage that? Have you met any challenges with that? Because let's say, from habit, I'm going to try and give them the benefit of the doubt. A lot of the colleagues I met who manage a senior level in MMA are very bulshy alpha male. And I imagine that might be quite an intimidating environment, maybe the first time you come into it.
Yes, you know, our goal is to increase the number of female athletes, but also of, you know, women in the ruling position. And the first thing, when I launch a women's commission in every country, I think it's a first door to reach this goal, you know, because there, I ask them, it's important to have a woman leading this position, because, of course, she will be representing all other women, so it's important. But of course, we want gender equality in the committee. You know, it's very important that men, you know, we need male advocacy.
Yes, we do.
And they are a huge leverage, because so many women are where they are now thanks to male support.
Yes, so, 100%.
It's super important to have the leverage. And we start with having these women being involved in the commission. And thanks to the IMF, we also have trainings, you know, to have officials and referees. Yeah. So, you know, it's the truth. When you have reached a certain age in which you know you will not be able to compete, I'm 38 years old and I know that I will never be an MMA athlete, but I'm so passionate that I want a part of, you know, in the game,
the sport,
sports. And so many women are in the same position as me, you know, and basically they have other options. They can be judges, they can be referees, they can be officials, or they can do what you do.
Exactly. They can host and marketing and podcasting are definitely both my passions, and I would 100% encourage anybody who loves MMA to get into that, because I think the more stories and the more amplification there is for female participation, both in and outside of that ring, I think can only advance your sport. And just looking at it more of an individual level, obviously, I think something that is worth mentioning to everybody is, of course, that you are a lawyer. That is your profession. And so she's incredibly accomplished. Which I know people are probably like, oh my goodness, this woman.
I'm paralegal. I'm not lawyer yet, but I'm paralegal.
Paralegal for one of the biggest companies in the world. So I think I think it's fair to say you're still smashing it at life. We're not gonna sit here and say otherwise.
People can check on LinkedIn, they'll find you.
Exactly. I'm sure they're Googling right now. But what I wanted to talk about there was to talk about the transfer of skills that obviously you've been able to bring to this role through your other profession of your career, because this is something, as I say to you, I speak to a lot of young girls that I mentor and that I've got a chance to connect with in this podcast around. And it's thinking about that when you start off your career, that just because you start in one way, it doesn't mean that you end there. And to think about how you can use your current professional skill set to come into the sport, because all the things, of course, you've developed and learned in your paralegal career, you've been able to bring really well here. So do you want to talk a little bit about what motivate, how you kind of navigated to transfer your skills there? Because I think it could be a nice learning for a lot of people also looking to change their career at the moment, right? At any age, this is becoming a new, let's say, I think really nice phenomenon that has happened since the pandemic, that people are reevaluating where they go in life. So I thought it'd be nice to sit and speak to you specifically about how you manage that.
Yes, I'm very lucky to work in a huge company where self-development is very important. You know, we have a lot of trainings on our well-being at work and on the idea that we should trust ourselves in the new challenges. And we develop a lot the diversity and inclusion, you know, ideas, and that we fight against unconscious bias, for example. And so these weapons, because basically for me they are weapons, helped me to believe in this project and to go beyond my fear of being in a very male space, world, you know. So I came here, you know, in this commission being like, oh, I've always been told at work that I will be able to do this and that can, you know, face my challenges. And if I fail, it's not a failure. It's an experience.
Yes. That's such an important thing.
Yes. And I changed my state of mind, I think my professional career helped me a lot with going through this experience. And to be honest with you, I'm trying to give this to other women that I meet or that I talk to. You know, sometimes they don't have this, you know, enough they are not self-confident. Because they evolve in a very male-oriented world where they hear all the time that, oh no, it's not a women thing, it's not for women. And basically, I try to change this state of mind, you know. And this is also, just to have a link with the former questions, having more female, you know, in sports or in a ruling position allows us to have role models so that young girls can be inspired, you know, think, oh,
by seeing the example, you have to see to believe.
You believe what you see. So 100%. I'm trying to give this to, you know, to give visibility to these women. For example, we have two president of MMA federation, the Federation of MMA in Panama and in Namibia.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so we are very proud to have these women being involved and to be the big boss in the Federation.
Yes, exactly.
So they are very careful, you know, they are very listening to what we're doing. Yeah. And I want to give visibility through the social media to these women, because now people go, you know, through the social media. Social media is such a leverage. Yes, such a leverage. And we need to explore this to give example of success and to give good stories.
Yeah, 100%. That positive and constant representation and visibility is so important, and because it's affirming and it's also motivating. And I think that's two things that you definitely have to do that. And I love the fact that how your day-to-day environment, let's say in your original profession that has now evolved so well, helped to set you up with the tools and that belief system, and also the actual, let's say, practical things in place that helped you to then, when you came into the space, you were like, okay, I can do this because I've been in this space before. And if I don't, and I think what you said then, I want to repeat it because it was such a great phrase. And that's something I need to definitely hold on to, which is to say that if something doesn't go well, if you fail at it, it's not a failure, it's an experience. And I think that's something that, let's say, women, typically speaking, in environments, particularly in sport, where there's so few of us, particularly in leadership positions, we're not allowed to fail. And I think that is something we need to really challenge and really normalize. You know, male failure is very normalized. It's almost expected, and sometimes I would dare say celebrated.
Yes.
But female failure is not. It's a real still a taboo. And I think that, again, acts as another barrier. So I think normalizing and making failure be a lessening and an experience versus a bad thing, I think is such a positive and very good message. Yeah. So thank you for sharing that wisdom.
And there's a French quote that says something like, only people who really work fail. The others never fail because they don't try, you know, don't work. So, and because there are so many things to do in MMA, of course, there will be failures, but there will always be more success.
Yes, definitely. And I think this leads us really nicely onto the next section that I really wanted to spend time with you on, just because of the great diversity you've had in your career and the fact that you're on this path to setting sort of a new trail for your sport. I wanted to sit and talk through the kind of career-defining experiences and successes that you've had, because I think it's important as well to kind of bank that and distill that, because I'm sure, like many people, when they look you up and they follow your journey, they'll be wondering, what are the things that you've gone through that have helped you get here and the things that you're looking forward to building on? So in no particular order, if you were to sort of try and distill it into three key things that have helped set you up the way you have, what would they be and why?
I think that one of the most important moment of my career was to work in law firms where I was very surprised of the place of the ego in the work environment. Yeah. I think I was pretty naive before going in this environment because I used to be an English teacher a very long time ago. And, you know, I never noticed that. I mean, I was working in schools with people who didn't have such ego. You know, we all have dignity.
Yes.
But there was no ego. And then I went in this environment where people were just competing in the biggest ego, not to say something else.
Yes.
And so... if you see what I mean.
Yeah, we do. I think it's universally understood. I love that.
And so I was very shocked, to be honest, how people could talk to other people.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to show who was the boss. Uh-huh. And I think, you know, I didn't want to be treated inferiorly. I don't know if we say this way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, you do.
But
you do.
I used to not let people, you know, treat me.
Yeah,
it was very important to me because I told to one of my boss, you'll never pay me enough to be insulted or disrespected. I'd rather going and work at McDonald's or, you know, go back to a work where I have to work very long hours and not so well paid, rather than being here and let you talk to me like this. So it was the first time I had this experience.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes, you know, Then I went through this environment in this American company where people are very careful with how they talk to you and your, you know, career development and your self-esteem. I think that was, you know, a huge and great balance for me. Where I realized, to see both and to see that, you know, work is not a place of pain.
Which is, you know? Which is important because I think that's another thing that's sadly been too normalized for too long, that you are meant to suffer and work or not be happy and, and just be able to put up with it because, you know, you are being paid. That is not the case. And what I want to track back to there is just that experience that you had at the way you had the poor experience and not being treated with respect and professional dignity. What was it within yourself that allowed you to have that confidence to be assertive enough to call your boss out and stand up for yourself? Because I think that's something I certainly, you know, struggled with in my early part of my career. So I'm just thinking for other people who are still, you know, because it is challenging and especially in the environment, were they factors in your upbringing or things that helped to give you that sense of self? Because I think that's important to talk to.
I know that so many people don't dare, you know, answer back or, you know, and I think it's a question, it's also a matter of personality, but I think my parents gave me the right tools, you know, to be honest, because my father is has a very strong personality. And I used to, you know, to be raised in a family where my father, like I would say, like in a patriarchal, you know, model. And even though my mom is like the general, like I would say that my father is the general of the army, and my mom is the right hand of my father, and. And all my brothers and sisters have a very strong personality. So we had a lot of discussion at home. And sometimes, you know, we argued a lot. Debates, you know. And I have three brothers and my father. And sometimes when I was young, I used to fight with my brothers and, you know, to really fight, you know, like physically fight. So I think it was a first, you know, training.
I was going to say that was your first MMA debut. You made it very young.
And to be honest, there's another experience that is not so great, but that helped me, you know, going through this, you know.
To navigate this kind of very male-dominated spaces and spaces where you had to really assert yourself in order to be heard and seen.
Absolutely. And I was raised in a very racist village where we were the only Arabic people, the only Muslim people. And, you know, the people living in this village were not happy with us to be there. So
I'm sorry for that experience. I've sadly faced it myself. So I appreciate how tough that is. And but it is one of those things that also I say to people has also helped to defy me and fortify my belief system in myself, because you have to really, when you face that level of someone really discriminating against you and not giving you access and opportunity or even basic acknowledgement as a human being because they see you as lesser than, you really need to find the tools within yourself to validate yourself. And for me, that has really helped always in my career when I've faced challenges to keep that first of foremost, because that, let's say that was that first fight that I need to get over in order to get out.
Exactly. And, you know, I was bullied physically, mentally. And my father used to say, don't answer back, don't fight back. But at a certain time when I grew up, you know, a girl attacked my brother. And that was the moment when I decided to fight back, because I could take it for myself, but I couldn't let anyone touch my family. And so this was the first time I got fired from my school because of this argument, because the girl attacked my brother and I defended my brother. And so I got fired from school for 3 days. And I realized that sometimes, you know, you're not in the right environment. And I think that was the first time when I realized that actually, as long as you don't, you know, have so much to lose, you can answer back and fight back, you know. I think it's a question of dignity, self-esteem. And I knew it wasn't right. Like I knew it wasn't right and fair what was happening in the law firms where people were ruling with the ego. You know, sometimes even though you were the only one, sometimes you can be the only one to be right. You know? It's not about how many people think this way. People most of the time are very scared of losing their job.
Yes.
And I think you have this also in MMA. You need to find the right team and to find the right gym where you can develop your skills, you know?
Yeah.
And so many times you see the huge champions and role models, they talk about their gyms and about their coach because they know that they reach this point thanks to other people. And I think at work, it's exactly the same. You need to have the right team around you.
Yeah. And also recognizing when you're in the, in, as you put it very well there, not in the right environment where you are not going to actually be able to thrive and realize your full potential. And having the courage to step out of those environments is really important, as you say, in order to go and find the right people and the right group that can create the conditions for you to be your best self. I think that's such a great learning as well.
This is a huge leverage. You know, you feel you have potential, but you feel you can't develop this potential and you are frustrated because you're not given the right tools. You know, like people ask you to build something, but they just give you a fork.
Yes.
What can I do with a fork, you know?
Yeah, exactly. A fork and your hands tied. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
My favorite working conditions. Nah.
But once you can do that, you can do everything.
Exactly. Everything. Yeah. But no, that's such a great learning. And thank you as well for taking us into your personal history there with some moments that I'm sure were difficult. That was also really appreciated because I think it's in those moments, you know, they say no one sees the things that happen in the dark. They only see when you're now in the light, but I think it's great as well. Thank you for being kind enough to share that because I know it's a personal.
To be honest with you, I think that all the people who are fighting now for a cause for or in the sports, it comes from pain.
Yes.
I don't have in mind someone who's been always happy in their lives and achieving these things. I'm sure there are people, but what I noticed is that most of the time it comes from pain and difficulties, you know.
Yes.
So when I hear Ronda Rousey talking about her past, she's been through so much, or Rose Namajunas, who said that she had mental problems and issues, and all these women went through a lot. I'm thinking about Amanda Nunes, so many people, you know, they
is that red thread. That's exactly, that's the common thread, is the pain.
They turn the pain into success.
Yes, exactly. And they used it as a platform to say that we won't repeat that for somebody else. I've had this and it was not a great experience, and now it's time to change the course of that destiny for other people. And I think that's such a powerful platform on which to operate. And I think that's what excites me so much about your role and the things that you're doing, that it is that platform for women who are going to come after you and have that. And so I think that's, it leaves us into a nice place to end with the question I always love to ask. And I know it's maybe a little bit unfair because you're just at the beginning of the project, but because I've got a chance to see your work and how you operate, I'm sure you've already envisaged this. What is sort of the legacy piece for you? What would you love to look back on in like 10, 15 years time? Because you're still really young and that'll probably just be maybe at the halfway mark. What would you love to look back on and say that you had left behind in the sport or even in life, you know, that helped create a pathway for other women?
I really hope, you know, that I will leave a legacy where other people will, you know, carry on what I started. Something, you know, strong enough that will still exist in 10, 20 years, that we will have more visibility, that we will have gender equality in sports, generally speaking, and that we will close the visibility gap in the media for female athletes. There are so many things, you know, like the salary equality for female athletes and the right conditions for women who will have a baby. I mean, that sports adapt to women and not only the other way around, because so many female athletes have to stop their career because the environment, as we were saying earlier, is not fit for them. So if I'm ambitious, and I would say that hopefully I see sports adapted to women to have more role models, and because we need a sports for all. This would be the ultimate goal, you know. And I know that I might not be, you know, still alive when it happens. But I think, you know, it's like in the movie Inception. You need to to put,
feed
you know,
the idea.
To feed the idea.
Exactly. And build all the conditions in which to have that idea manifest. And
exactly. And I hope to inspire other women saying, oh, you know, with her career, and because she never, you know, I never competed in MMA. I started MMA like last year, you know, because I really wanted, I was just a watcher, you know, I was just a huge fan. A
spectator,
Exactly, a spectator. And I want, you know, women in even the poorest countries believe that they can do something at their level in their village or in the city, you know. Everything is good to be, everything is good for them. Inspire people, or you know, something like that.
Well, you're already living your legacy because you're a huge inspiration to me and many others that I know are in your sport. So I wish you all the very best as you continue on this incredibly galvanizing journey. I'll be watching and I'm excited. Please don't forget to let me know when I can come to one of your events in France. I would really, really love to do this. Exactly. I'd really, really love to do this.
Thank you.
I encourage everyone, please go ahead and follow the great work that Asia and her team are doing over at the IMF. It's really extraordinary to see, and I'll always be here rooting for you in your corner. So
Thank you so much. Thank you for the invitation and for being inspiring as well, because I really love your work, and really it's really sincere. And I'm sure we'll see each other very soon. We'll make things evolve in a better way.
100%. I'm all here for that. And I thank you for your kindness. So thank you to everybody for tuning in to another episode of In Her Corner. I've been with the absolutely brilliant Hazia Belem, who is the chairwoman for the International Mixed Martial Arts Federation.